Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor, a three-hour special today. By the way, our next hour, 6 to 7, will be answering your questions. This hour, we're going to be talking with Rick Broida, our gadget guy, about the recently concluded Consumer Electronics Show, some of the highlights of that. And we'll be talking then after that with Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau about the upcoming North American International Auto Show, our really big show about innovation in the automotive world. If you are just joining us for our second hour of this three-hour special, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, and with me, Mr. Gary Baker is in studio here. Gary, good to have you here.
It's great to be here for a three-hour show today. So wonderful.
And we are closing in on our anniversary.
That's right. 17th anniversary is coming up on the 7th of February. So you can believe that they've allowed us to be on the air for 17 years. So it's pretty amazing.
They didn't know what they were unleashing on the public with this.
And to give us 3 hours today. Wow.
I know.
That was very nice of WJR and our affiliates.
Absolutely. Right? And it means, by the way, that we will be able to get our full hour of your questions in from 6 o'clock until 7 o'clock for those of you who are listening to us live. By the way, if you only hear portions of this program, you can go to theinternetadvisor.net, our homepage, and then download. On Sunday nights, I post the podcast, and you can download them there. Individual hours and individual segments as well.
By that segment with Jeff DeGraff.
Oh, I want to thank you
hour.
for that. That was wow.
Isn't he good? Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, it's hard to even interject any questions because he talks like a professor.
He answers them before you ask,
yes,
right?
Very often he does. And by the way,
way he explains stuff as well. Yeah. Like you said, he answers himself.
You're right. I'm the dean of innovation.
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm teasing you to get a copy of or listen to this last hour because it was incredible. Eddie Riddell, of course, in studio here, along with the white-haired wonder.
You know, I'm thinking...
Cal Carson.
I'm really thinking, you know, when you say people hearing portions of this, they should be calling their radio station saying, look, I want to hear it all. I want it all. I want 3 hours. No, yeah. I want 4 hours of this every week.
We used to do 4 hours. Yeah. That was tough. That got to be a little much.
But well, that's because you didn't tap dance.
Yeah, I guess that was it. It's hard to make that really work on radio.
They didn't have coffee back then.
we did a lot of the what we're going to be doing in our next hour, which is answering questions, and that's always fun.
Yeah.
That is always fun.
Absolutely.
Talking with folks. So, by the way, in studio for this hour, we got Rick Broida, the gadget guy. How you doing, Rick?
I'm great. I didn't know I was going to have to follow someone like that, though. This is tough.
What an act.
Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, you write for CNET. When we first talked to you, it's 2-3 years ago now, first had you on, it was maybe only 6 or 7 different, you know, well-known computer magazines. Now it's just about everyone, I think. They're all picking you up.
Including Time Magazine.
I'm everywhere.
Including Time Magazine. That's right.
Absolutely. Time.com. You know, it's not quite the magazine.
It's better than the magazine because people read it.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
Probably more people reading what's in there.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Rick, what is your main outlet now for your articles? Is it CNET?
I think the lion's share of what I'm doing now is for CNET.
But you also do. We kid about your being cheap enough when you squeeze a nickel, the buffalo moves.
Yeah, the cheapskate blog is what he used.
Right.
So because, cheap, I won't even tip my hat.
There you go. Because you do a number of those things for savings.com, right?
Yes, a little bit for savings.com. I write for Wired a little bit here and there. For Time now is kind of a new gig. So, you know, I'm doing a little bit of this.
I think but in particular, seen you on PC Mag and some others. So.
But your focus has been in particular on helping people to save money when they buy things.
That's definitely my passion, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's your passion.
And buy really cool things. And that's what we're talking to them about, which is all the new stuff that came out, was at least introduced at CES, Consumer Electronics Show.
You didn't go, did you?
I didn't go this year. In fact, Cal was just asking me, or noting that it seemed like a lot of journalists took a pass this year, which I did. And, you know,
it was the biggest one. So somebody filled in your spot. Somebody sat in your seat. Yeah.
You know, I think what has happened in the last couple of years is that people went to CES and they came back feeling like it was kind of flat. Like there just wasn't really anything super exciting.
Right.
Kind of more of the same. You know, sure, we're seeing some 3D
TVs.
Printers.
Like, oh, it's curved now.
Okay, TV. Oh, yeah, right. Big deal. So, and I wasn't really that excited myself to go this year, and I'm really kicking myself now because I feel like I missed out on some really cool stuff. We're going to talk about some of it.
Yeah, we're going to talk. What things in particular did you feel like?
Well, the Oculus Rift, I think, is the thing I have been wanting to see for the longest time.
Literally.
And so my colleague, Dave Johnson, who has been on the show before.
Oh, from eHow.
From eHow. He went to the show. He was very sad that I wasn't there to keep him entertained. And he got a chance to demo the Oculus Rift. And what he wrote about it on Facebook was that he said it was the most game-changing thing he's ever seen.
Now, like Oculus Rift is what, a 3D set of glasses?
Yes, thank you. It's a virtual reality headset.
Right.
Just an order of magnitude better than anything that's been done up till now. It was purchased last year by Facebook, just kind of out of the blue for like $2 billion.
Right.
And the development, you know, between last year's model and this year's model, just in that time period alone, apparently has been amazing. CNET's Scott Stein wrote something about it and absolutely was mesmerized by the experience.
Right.
And I think we are just about at that tipping point now where all of a sudden virtual reality is going to go from being this novelty thing that really never worked too well to, oh my goodness, we're looking at something major here.
You know, I talked to a couple of friends this last week, and as this was coming out, and they were saying, well, we did a lot of that at the EDS Virtual Reality Lab. And I said, yeah, how much did that cost? He said, well, initially it only cost us $2 million to build. But and I'm going, yeah, and now they're selling it individually to all of us so we can afford.
So which brings up the magic question, what is this thing selling for? Or is this going to be another $1,500 boondoggle like Google Glass?
Like Google Glass. So
I'm not sure that's a boondoggle. I know people think that it is, but there's a lot of people starting to figure out how to use it in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see.
We'll see
the next, not this version, but I think the next version.
So with Oculus, with the cost.
But anyway.
So Oculus Rift is still not on sale to the general public,
right.
And I don't think that they have actually landed on what the price point is going to be. I think that what they're hoping to do is get it to the point where it's, you know, a couple $100, $300-$400, which would be pretty amazing.
And I think it was the proof of performance this year that was there to sell people.
Right.
From then, now we're going to see how it's going to be applied. Rick Broida, our gadget guy, and we're going to be talking about the Oculus Rift and some of the other things that came out of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, as we continue with the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Thank you very much also to Eric Dorsch and to Rich Lisinski, who are working behind the glass, helping us with our program. By the way, coming up the second hour, Eric is going to get a workout because this actually, the next hour, our third hour, we're going to have open lines at 800-859-0957. And you'll be able to, just before the end of this hour, you can start calling and lining up with your questions about maybe a gift that you got over the holidays you have a question about.
That's right. He's giving us a thumbs up. He's ready for the challenge.
He is ready for the challenge. Right. Speaking of the challenge, Rick Broida is with us, our gadget guy. And the challenge, when you look at CES, which has just finished, is kind of to figure out what to talk about because there's so much that went on there. The one area that I thought that really caught my eye, it got the award as the best of CES.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the people who were at CES. It was called Sling TV. Tell us about that.
Yes. Nice. So Sling TV, not to be confused with the Sling Box, even though it's from the same company, completely different division, I guess I'd say, is a service that will deliver to you live TV by way of your Roku box, your tablet, your phone, your Amazon Fire TV stick, any of those types of devices, a whole range of channels for $20 a month. And this is really kind of a surprise, kind of a revolutionary bundling of channels that you really couldn't get before outside of your cable company.
This is kind of like the a la carte we were talking about before.
I get to pick my channel. That's neat.
That brings up a weird question because now I'm trying to figure out why is it that Sling TV is going to be able to work but Aereo couldn't.
Right, so Aereo was the antenna-based service that was just giving you network programming, so ABC, NBC, and those guys. And I think, again, they were probably a little ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they got litigated out of business, but this is, you know, what these guys are bringing. Sling is going to bring you a couple of ESPN channels, Disney Channel, ABC Family. So Food Network, HGTV, cable channels, not the regular old fuddy-duddy networks.
Over the air stuff. Right.
Right, exactly. So I guess
TBS,
they were able to work
TNT,
that out.
TNT, Cartoon Network,
right.
Disney Channel.
Disney Channel.
And all that for $20. Now, I understand.
Now, you have to be invited. Right now, you have to be invited.
Sure.
So what you have to do is you have to put your email in and hit the button that says get invited, and they invite you, right?
And by the way, we've got a link. I don't have that. I'm sorry. I'll have to put that up on the darn, on our homepage there, I just have the categories, the names, but we'll put a link there too, so you can sign up and put an invitation in.
Right, and what's interesting about it too is that this is not a DVR type system, and it's not right. an on-demand system.
Doesn't depend on a box.
Right, and so you can't, in a way, it's almost a little old-fashioned because you're just getting access to these live channels the same as you would through a cable box.
Like a good old TV used
but
to
I
be.
Think what more people want now is to be able to watch stuff on demand. So I'm eager to see how this plays out, but I almost feel like this is almost a throwback, like kind of like this should have been happening 5 years ago.
Yes.
Right now, I want to get access to all the content that these channels offer on demand when I want it and not just when it's live.
Well, the other thing is that I'd like a choice. So why should I stick with 9 items? Do I have the ability to order more in the future? Will I get the ability to do
that? I think TiVo is going to try to take advantage of this other thing called TiVo One Pass. Mm-hmm. Now, that is tied in to their devices, the Romeo, Premier, and Mini devices. And with that, I understand, you can go back, and you can do things on demand. But that's tied then to their devices.
Right, which TiVo, not a lot of people own TiVo boxes.
Right,
but,
and it costs a fair amount.
So I want to get this straight. The Sling, this new Sling device, has a number of...
no device.
Not a device, it's a service.
Oh, it's just a service?
Just a service. Yeah. Right. You work with your Roku box or your tablet whatever. Yeah,
okay.
So it's just what they call an on-top service.
So I was looking for like an app, but it's not an app. You have to go to their website, right? To sign up.
No, you are incorrect, sir.
Okay, so,
so it
is an app. It's something you'll sign up for, like you would for, say, Netflix, and you'll just access it through any of your existing devices.
So
that
it's
you
a
have.
Streaming service.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm looking, and it's not showing up in the App Store.
Well, it's not out yet.
This month it's coming out this
patience,
month.
Gary,
that's why.
Patience.
Come on, I want it now. We're talking about
what's interesting about
this is a now generation.
The interesting thing about this is because a lot of times at CES you see stuff, think, "Oh, that's really cool," and it never comes out.
Yeah.
In this case, it's coming out at the end of this month. It'll be out,
and it is potentially sounds like it could be a cable cutting.
Oh,
type
for
of
sure.
scenario.
There's a lot of cord cutting stuff that came out of CES, not just this.
Right.
There was a new. The new Tableau over-the-air DVR, which is also antenna-based. It has built-in antennas instead of having you to hook up your own antenna. So a lot of interesting things happening in the cord-cutting front, for sure.
Okay, let's talk about something I know that's near and dear to your heart. There's so much that came out of it. That's drones.
Yes, drones.
Was that big this year?
Oh, my God. If there was, I think that was probably one of the biggest things to come out, was just the sheer number of new models that were announced and demonstrated at CES. I mean, when I was there last year, there were a couple. This category has exploded.
I heard that they're expecting over 400,000. No, was it 400,000 purchases of drones this year?
Oh, and that would not surprise me at all. I think that's probably a low estimate.
We had Harry Arnold last week on from Detroit Drones, and some of the applications are just incredible.
It really
is. He's working with the fire department when they're fighting fire, and a lot of other things as well. It's happening.
Oh, stuff is so cool. And again, I do want to, I guess, caveat it that I think that there are some dangers that need to be addressed.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I think it's just a matter of time before something unfortunate happens with somebody, you know, who pilots one of these things and doesn't know what they're doing. It goes out of control, out of range.
Well, I hope the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, gets off the stick and finally lays down some basic rules.
It really becomes a question of how do you implement and how do you enforce rules. But let's not talk about the negative. Let's talk about the positive.
How about the one that's on the wrist?
That's basically, you clip it onto your wrist like a wristband, and then it just pops loose and it flies away.
And it takes a picture of you.
And it takes a selfie.
A drone selfie.
It's a Drelfie.
A Drelfie. A new category.
Trademark.
Yeah, of course it is.
Eddie, something is near and dear to your heart. We're going quickly on this. Reversible USB.
Oh, now that's cool. Now, why didn't I hear anything about this with the USB 3.0 standard? There's a 3.1, and apparently there's an A and a C, and one's the mini, and one's the what would look like the larger USB, but they're reversible.
Duh,
like the lightning adapter.
Yes.
Duh, it only took so long, but... what are some of the other attributes of it? Because I could not believe...
Well, I think faster, certainly, is one big one. But just the fact that you don't have to now bend over and look at the port or the plug just to find out which way it goes in.
Every night when I go to bed, I have to plug my thing in. And how many people do I support in the corporation I work for where they hand you a cell phone and says it stopped charging? Well, that's because you could tell they were plugging in the wrong way for the last 3 months.
Well, it's kind of interesting to see the process, because this new USB was approved in mid-2014. The universal,
USB Type-C, is that what we're talking
about? Yeah, USB Type-C was approved, and there are now specifications for it. The thing I heard about it is that it's going to allow incredible throughput for power. Like, you'll be able to actually charge a laptop with some with something that has this connector to it.
Wow. You know, 100 watts, which is unprecedented. 100 watts that you'd be able to get out of the USB 3.1 standard. That is a lot compared to what we have now. I think is like 10 watts is the maximum you can. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you cannot charge an iPad through an existing computer for the most part, and some cell phones, because you have to use an AC adapter
through an existing Windows computer.
Yeah, Cal at home.
No, Cal. Thank you.
I have trouble sometimes charging my iPhone and the laptop so much, but the iPad. Because I don't get enough throughput on it.
So basically, coming down the line is going to be yet another USB standard that we're going to have to buy new adapters for our cell phones, basically.
I'm hanging on. If I were going to be getting a new laptop, I would be waiting a little bit to find these things on the devices. They're not on right now.
No. Not yet.
By late 2015.
Is that what we think?
I think so. Yeah.
So go ahead.
And wait that long.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So go ahead and buy your laptop now, and buy another one in the end of the year.
Yeah, right. Okay, one more thing from there: the Compute Stick.
The Compute Stick. Yeah, interesting item from Intel is this thing called the Compute Stick, which is a $150 gizmo that looks basically like a USB dongle, except that it's an HDMI dongle. So it's going to plug into your TV. It's going to basically turn your TV into a Windows 8.1. PC with a decent amount of power, cool, but what do I want my TV to be a PC for? I haven't quite worked that out yet.
That's right.
Rick Broida, thank you so much. Our gadget guy, thanks so much for being with
you.
Us here.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for the Internet Advisor. I hope you've been having fun here. This has been kind of a wild carousel of just all sorts of things. Coming off of two big events, one was the Consumer Electronics Show. We just kind of finished our coverage of that, although we'll touch on that in just a moment again. But the next thing coming up is the North American International Auto Show 2015. The Press Week will be starting this coming week, and that is kind of the really big show here in Detroit. And with us to talk about that is Paul Eisenstein, who is the editor and the producer of the Detroit Bureau, where throughout the year he's talking about the automobile industry, and he's our analyst. Paul, thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
Hey, my pleasure to be with you, and Happy New Year belatedly.
Thank you very much. Hey, before we get to talking about the North American International Auto Show, we really didn't talk about the Consumer Electronics Show, which I know you went to, which also had some big things from the automotive world.
You know, it's interesting, isn't it, that a show that used to be all about computers, smartphones, TVs, and the like, has become extremely important to the auto industry. We saw, for the first time, an entirely new concept vehicle created specifically for CES in the form of the Mercedes-Benz F015 Luxury in Motion concept.
So it's kind of hard to tell the difference between the two shows these days. There's so much consumer electronics going into our autos.
Yeah,
there is a bit of an overlap there, definitely. And I think you're going to see more and more of an overlap between the shows going forward, especially now that we're moving to the stage where autonomous technology is going be very likely. As a matter of fact, if you don't mind, I'll mention something that I was intrigued by. There was a study that just came out a couple of days ago that suggested that there will be are you ready for this? $42 billion market by 2025 for autonomous vehicle technology in the U.S. alone.
Wow. I mean, not like the Google urban cars along with the Mercedes, and I think another one wasn't... was it Audi that had one there?
A couple of my friends, a couple journalists I know, had the chance to actually drive several hundred miles to the CES show in an Audi autonomous vehicle, which is pretty intriguing. And Cadillac is saying that they will have their so-called SuperDrive, which is a semi-autonomous technology. There's a lot of technologies that will be coming over the next few years, probably starting in 2016. They'll allow you to drive in an autonomous situation in a limited area. For example, on a freeway, a limited access highway. That's what SuperDrive will do. And then there are a whole bunch of so-called parking valet systems. BMW showed one at CES. Imagine being able to, well, let's say you want to go out for a restaurant for dinner, and it's just like it has been the last few days, frigid cold. Mm-hmm. Nothing worse than getting to your destination and then having to go hunting all over, in some cases parking 3-4 blocks away, for a parking spot, right? Even worse, how about all these people that have to go to the black tie in just a little less than a week? These poor women, my wife has gone there. She's wearing a beautiful gown. You know, the women want to have huge slits and cuts and backless, and they get out and it's 12 below zero as it was last year, and they have to walk 3 blocks. Oops. Now imagine having a car that will actually drop you off at your location and then go with nobody in the car and go find a parking spot for itself. BMW's system and Hyundai, there's been a couple makers, you could hit your smartwatch and say, come and get me. The car might, in fact, be able to warm up before it comes to get you.
Oh, my goodness.
I like the other feature that it'll probably be. The car will leave and go park itself somewhere, and then your phone will ring later, and the car will say, someone's taken all four of my wheels off. I'm not coming to get you.
I want to know how it pays for parking. You know?
I was going to say parking tickets. How's it going to pay for parking tickets?
No, it'll probably be equipped with an electric shock that it can give to the parking attendant.
That's not a bad idea. I think I'd pay a premium for that one.
Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau with us. So a lot of things have come out, in particular in terms of the autonomous vehicles, but a lot of other things as well as in the cabin of the car from CES. I saw one that looked like it had a tablet on the dashboard.
Yeah, there's, I'm trying to remember which car that was. Yes, a few makers have been talking about doing that. In fact, my understanding is that a couple of the Mercedes vehicles, like the CLA, you know, that entry-level model that's been such a success for them.
Oh, yeah.
Mercedes was supposedly looking at the idea of having a removable tablet on the instrument panel. You may notice that some of the new Mercedes, it looks like they have one, but it's not removable. And I've heard that they ran into legal problems. Some of the legal folks said, "Tech, unless you can guarantee me that tablet will go in there and not be removable, won't fly off, won't cause injuries during an accident. Well, unless you can do that, we can't have that." And so they wound up not putting, allowing you to put your iPad, for example, in the car.
Cal?
So, Paul, let me ask this question so I can get a little more clarification. When you say an autonomous vehicle, do you never, ever drive it, or do you drive it sometimes? And if you don't drive it ever, then are we really driving? Aren't we just riding?
That's an interesting thing. And in fact, here's a suggestion. We should do a contest for the best alternative word to describe what somebody sitting in the so-called driver's seat is when they're not driving.
But you're not driving.
Co-pilot? I mean, that's the best I can come up with.
I was thinking panicked, but...
Yeah. Well, here's a situation. Now, according to the study that just came out, and by the way, if anybody wants to go to thedetroitbureau.com, they'll find that study.
Oh, good.
I'm just looking for it. Here it is. It's the third story down on our current list. That'll change pretty quickly because we have a lot of stories coming next few days. American motorists ready for autonomous vehicles, and more importantly, willing to pay for them. This study suggested that they may be willing to pay, the Boston Consulting Group did this, as much as $5,000 for this technology. Their study basically focused on what they thought were a number of semi-autonomous technologies. That parking valet I told you about, the Cadillac SuperDrive system that can work only in limited access highways, vehicles that can operate autonomously but only on specific routes, perhaps your daily commute, and then systems that can operate at low speeds only in heavy traffic. And we're almost there, by the way. That one is pretty close to it because, you know, some vehicles right now, Mercedes S-Class, for example, with all the options, can come to a complete stop temporarily and then start up again when traffic gets moving. So we're very, very close to limited or partial autonomous vehicles already. But what happens next is the big question, and I'll, if you'd like, I'll give you some thoughts on that.
Okay, let's do that, because what I want to do is to make sure we talk about what's coming up at the North American International Auto Show. But give me some thoughts. Yes, I'd be interested.
Well, this is an interesting thing. I'm a driver. I like to be behind the wheel.
I do too.
But I remember something that was said to me some years ago, about 15 years ago, by a gent by the name of Bernd Pischetsrieder. He used to be the head of BMW, right at the time when autonomous technology was just first being discussed. And BMW, curiously, was one of the first to get serious about it. And I said to him, Bernd, I don't get it. You guys build what you call the ultimate driving machine.
Yeah.
Why would you be interested in building the ultimate non-driving machine? And he said, here, look at me. I live up in the Bavarian Alps, foothills of the Alps, and he would come about an hour some a day to his office in Munich. And he said, during the morning when the traffic's heavy, why do I want to sit behind the wheel and stop and go traffic? I either want to catch a little more sleep or I want to catch up on work. But in the evening when I go home, because I work so late, then I can have fun driving. That's when I want to be able to switch in and out of autonomous mode.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense.
Absolutely. So this is something that we've seen at CES. Are we going to see some of that now coming in at the North American International Auto Show this coming week?
Yeah, I believe that the Mercedes folks are going to have the FO15 on the floor.
Good.
There's been some debate over whether they're going to, and I have to double check with their people. My understanding is, that they will be bringing it from CES here. And you're certainly going to see a lot of other automakers talking about autonomous technology at the NAIAS.
What I'm curious about is if they're going to allow the autonomous vehicle to actually drive a bunch of people 200 miles away from Detroit, have them drive here on our icing potholes, icy roads with potholes, and have them arrive safely.
You know something? But it might do it much more safely than
some of the drivers
I see on the road here.
Absolutely.
I think I would be, in some cases, I'd be more comfortable being around autonomous vehicles.
Well, they're not going to tailgate me, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's one thing to drive on the pristine roads in California, where the only thing you have to worry about is earthquake and rock slides.
Okay. Yeah, and fires and blaze.
It's another thing that you have to deal with, Michigan drivers, potholes, and ice.
All right, Paul, coming up in our next segment, let's talk about what's going to be happening. The North American International Auto Show 2015 is going to be opening at the newly renovated Cobo Hall, and that's going to be coming up. The press week is starting this coming week. Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau will be back in just a moment to talk about what's coming up there. Welcome to this very special edition of the Internet Advisor. What makes it special? Well, we have the guys in studio here. We're talking about some interesting things that have to do with innovation, like the North American International Auto Show coming to Detroit starting this next week. But also, because it's special, because this next hour is dedicated to you. And that means when you call us starting at 6 o'clock at 800-859-0957, we're going to take your call and try to solve your problem for you. It's a fun part of our program, and I hope you'll get into the spirit of the new year by calling us there with your questions and concerns. Right now, however, we're going to go back to Paul Eisenstein, who's with us from the Detroit Bureau, which is a great place to go if you follow the car industry for all sorts of things that have to do with the car industry and the really big shoe coming to Detroit. Of course, Paul is the North American International Auto Show. Just quickly for our audience, what are the dates for the show?
Boy, let's see if we can get the whole package in. Okay, first, the media days start with an unofficial preview, bunch of previews tomorrow night. Media days are Monday and Tuesday officially.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Wednesday, Thursday, I believe, are the industry days, when those inside the industry
right.
can come in, get an early preview. The black tie, which I hear they have sold $5 million worth of tickets,
wow.
takes place on Friday. And that is the official public opening, and then it opens immediately after and is open for, a week and a half after that?
Right.
Yeah, until the 25th. Yeah.
Right, and through Martin Luther King Day, which is usually, I think, the end of it. When people mm-hmm. are very often out of school, it's kind of a neat day to get everybody family in there.
And that's actually the week before that. It ends the 25th this year.
Pardon me. Okay, so the week before that. And by the way, if you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, you will find a link to the website for the North American International Auto Show. And Paul W. Smith, our main guy here in the morning on WJR, is there. He was hosting one of the events last year.
And does every year.
Yep,
so,
yep. Does a great job of it as well. Okay, Paul, let's talk about, we've talked about some of the things that came out of CES. What are some of the highlights that you're going to be paying particular attention to this coming week, press week, for the International Auto Show?
Oh, man, there are a lot of them here. Certainly one of the things that I'm going to be watching very closely, because I think it's going to get a lot of press and a lot of public interest, will be the launch of the brand new next generation Volt,
right.
Chevy Volt. And I can tell you that we can expect it will get a lot more electric range. Electric-only range, it'll get a lot more fuel economy when it's in gasoline mode. Now, here's the thing that I'm working on right now to validate some of the stories that are out there, but it appears that there's another electric vehicle coming from the Chevy folks. They haven't told us about it.
Mm.
My sources are saying, yes, it really will be there, and it's going to be called the Chevy Bolt. With a B.
Oh, really?
And now this is a very important move by them. You know, most everybody out there has had at least an electric vehicle getting 70, 80, 90 miles. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, they say, okay, you can use that every day. But the reality is, for example, I have a little cottage out in Pinckney. I can't get there and back comfortably and safely. And so I'd
right.
have to charge it. Let's say I had to run out there just to let a handyman come in or something like
mm-hmm.
that. I'd need to stop and charge. Well, once you get up to 200 miles, that changes the game. And supposedly, the Chevy Bolt will be getting about 200 miles. It'll be one of the only cars up there besides the Tesla Model S to be getting anywhere near that range.
Wow.
So that's going to be a very, very important vehicle vehicle to watch.
Now, Paul, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We talk about all electric vehicles. I'm understanding that there's a lot of electrical technology, electric motors, in gas-powered vehicles that are out right now. We had a news item about Johnson Control unveiling a new battery system for advanced start-stop vehicles at the show.
Yeah, we did a story just a few weeks ago that suggests that by as early as 2017, conventional gas-powered vehicles, I'm talking about what in the industry they call naturally aspirated. No, they just suck air on their own. They don't have any turbos or superchargers. Those type of vehicles will be in the minority worldwide, and that you will be seeing the majority of vehicles on the road either use supercharged or turbocharged or have some form of electrification, even if it's just start-stop or all the way up to pure battery electric or even pure hydrogen. And by the way, another vehicle to watch will be the official debut of the production version of the new Honda FCV, their second production hydrogen car. We'll also see the Detroit debut of the Toyota Mirai, which is the new hydrogen car they're bringing to market. As a matter of fact, it'll be launching in the U.S. in a matter of months. Unfortunately, the only place you'll be able to buy it will be out in Southern California, because that's the only place right now where you can get hydrogen.
Yeah, and that's exact. And with a lot of these things, the real Achilles heel, as I understand, have been the stations. Where do you go? You can go anywhere to get gas. But you can't get hydrogen anywhere. It has to be a very special station. And then you also, even with electricity, where are you going to go to charge your car? I know that there are some cities, like in Royal Oak, I know, there's a couple of places that they have that. Matter of fact, they're talking about putting a park in downtown Royal Oak where they're going to have different charging stations that you can get into.
You know, we have charging stations in our parking lot out at Flagstar Bank at our headquarters.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Absolutely. And people come in and charge, when they are there all day, then they drive their vehicles home at night. So.
CompuWare, their building downtown, has a whole bank of electric vehicle chargers, the GM building, of course. Quite a few vehicle chargers are now being added all over the country. What's significant, though, is that we're starting to see so-called level 3 chargers. These are the ones that when you plug in, you'll be able to get an 80% recharge within as little as 15 minutes, depending on how big the capacity is.
Wow, and that's the big deal. Yeah, you won't have to sit there for 2 or 3 hours to get charged back up, and you can boom in that short of time. Great. Okay, any other kind of things we can look for as we're moving around the floor?
Well, what's going to be very interesting is that you have this curious thing where Detroit's going into some of the segments traditionally dominated by Japanese and vice versa. So you're going to see a compact pickup or mid-sized pickup from Toyota, the next generation Tacoma, trying to take on and prove that it can remain dominant over the new compact pickups, mid-sized pickups from General Motors, like the Chevrolet Canyon. Mm-hmm. And then there's a Nissan Titan, a much-delayed replacement for their full-size pickup.
Oh, that's right, they're full. Okay.
At a time when electric is struggling, we're going to see a lot of high-performance vehicles, and one of those will be the Cadillac CTS-V. I love this. 640 horsepower. It's 10 short of what you get in the Chevrolet Corvette Z06, which, by the way, I had a chance to drive while I was out in Nevada the other day.
Oh, my.
We expect to see, hasn't been confirmed, we expect to see the GT350R, the track version of the Mustang, Shelby Mustang, and then we're expecting one and possibly two high-performance vehicles to come from Lexus. You know, they're best known for their hybrids,
yeah.
And they're trying to put so-called passion into the brand. So we are going to see a 476 horsepower, if I remember my numbers right, Lexus GSF, and I am thinking... we may also see their next supercar. Remember, they had that carbon fiber sports car, the LFA. We may see the replacement for that.
You know, who wants an autonomous car when you get behind something like that? And Beryl, Kel?
Yeah, I got to tell you, that's the whole reason why I love driving and
yes.
not riding in a car.
Yeah.
Because it's that sort of thing. Paul, do you see anything on the future as far as electric for trucks?
Yeah, I think we're going to start seeing it. Unfortunately, a few makers tried to bring out hybrid versions of their trucks. They didn't sell very well.
Mm.
But these are the vehicles that are going to have the toughest time meeting emission standards short of sports cars. And here's the interesting thing to watch. Going forward, where I think manufacturers are going to put a heavy emphasis on electrification, whether it's basic start-stop, electric turbochargers or superchargers, or really advanced electronic systems, electric drive systems, will be in sports cars. Look at the Porsche 918.
Okay,
they're hybrid.
We've run out of time, and that's
Sorry.
What the car show is going to be. Lots of stuff to see. Paul Eisenstein, thank you. The Detroit Bureau. Folks, coming back in our next hour, 800-859-0957. You call them with your problems. We got the solutions. Thanks again, Paul Eisenstein, for being with us.